Okay, we'd like to get started. Get everybody here. All right. Thank you for attending the lunch session number 342 titled Meet the Women of the MTA. You're welcome to eat your lunches here. We just ask that you make sure you aren't disruptive of the presenter as you come and go. We only have 60 minutes for this session, and then we have to clear out for the next session, so be aware of that. We're hoping to, the presenters are going to present a few personal statements, and then they're hoping to have more a question-answer and a dialogue. Is that correct?
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Here's a little bit about the session. Their introduction is... MTA, by the way, is the Mormon Transhumanist Association, just to be clear. As technology accelerates cultural upheaval, Mormon transhumanists champion prophetic visions of human potential. The quickly advancing rate of science and technology developments in our modern world has particularly interesting implications for women, gender, and gender roles. What does it mean to be a woman if babies can be born in artificial wombs, or your gender expression can be enhanced or changed through hormones and other technology? How have time-saving household techniques and technologies changed the balance of gender roles? In a world where women are often closed out of both STEM fields and religious authority, both critical influences on society and daily life, how does transhumanism help women claim their power and equality? So these are some of the questions that will be hopefully discussed in this presentation. Our presenters are Michael Ann Gardner Bradley. She's the Chief Executive Officer of the Mormon Transhumanist Association. She also serves as Director of United Way of Utah County's Everyday Strong Initiative to help families cope with anxiety and depression, especially among preteens and youth. She is a longtime advocate for mental health in the community, including work for the Utah County Suicide Crisis Line, and as a spiritual care volunteer at Utah Valley Hospital. She also serves on the board of directors of LDS Earth Stewardship. She also served on the board of directors of LDS Earth Stewardship from 2013 to 2018. She currently attends St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Provo on the week she's not attending her Latter-day Saint ward, and is a passionate advocate for expansive Mormonism. Connie Packer is a registered dietitian who works in long-term care and writes about emerging research on, is it nootropics? Nootropics, thank you. okay, do you want to use, geroprotectors, is that right? Okay, sorry, for human enhancement. She is a board member of the MTA. Connie lives in Riverton, Utah, with her husband and three children. Wendy Smith, there we go, serves on the MTA board of directors. She holds a BA in economics and has built her career as a mortgage broker since 2004. Wendy is passionate about human rights and advancement and is active in local politics in her community. She resides in Draper, Utah, with her husband and two daughters. And then Sylvia Smith. Sylvia became a Mormon transhumanist based on her interest in the commonality between science and religion. As an engineer and athlete, she has spent plenty of time in male-dominated spaces and has always been interested in women's issues and roles in society. She strongly identifies as a nerd and loves supporting women's professional soccer. She lives, this is a particularly good year to do that, isn't it? She lives with her lovely husband in a basement in Sandy. This session is generously sponsored by the Mormon Transhumanist Association. And with that, I'm going to take a seat in the audience and let you go, and then we'll moderate questions.
So before we start, we wanted to kind of give you guys a little bit of context. How many of you have already been to a Mormon Transhumanist session today? Okay, not all of you. Okay, so a couple quick things that might help us get some context here. So people ask a lot, right? Like, what is Mormon transhumanism? And I'm going to assume that most of you here have at least been exposed to the idea in Mormonism that we can become gods, right? Theosis. That, you know, like, whether or not you agree with this, you know, this is something that was taught in Mormonism, that as people, you know, advance in spirituality, they can eventually become like God. And transhumanism is a modern movement that basically says that like as technology and science go faster and faster, human beings are basically most likely either going to blow themselves up, right? Because we'll be way more powerful than our ability to cope with such technology, or we'll become so super compassionate, so super ethical, so super powerful that we are basically godlike. And so there's a lot of resonance between these two ideas. And there's a lot that each of them can learn from each other. I think there's a lot that transhumanism can learn from religion in terms of being informed by ethics and virtues and compassion, and a lot that Mormonism can learn from transhumanism by being informed by science and technology and a pragmatism that I really personally appreciate. And when I say technology, I think it's important, as I adjust my glasses, actually, that was totally subconscious, that when we say technology, we're talking pretty broadly here, right? Like, the invention of fire was technology, right? All the way up to, like, the microchip and, like, you know, nuclear bombs and whatever. And so anything that's sort of in this hands-on man-made realm is what we consider technology. And then the final term I probably would need to define would be woman or female. And for the purposes of our conversation, I think I can fairly say all four of us are pretty progressively minded when it comes to like gender issues. But I think there's also sort of a traditional definition of Mormon, a traditional definition of woman that we're using in order to have this conversation. I'm sure we'll make some stumbles and flaws about how we talk about this, because I think right now we're in this huge turmoil of time where we don't actually really know exactly what does it mean to be a woman, what does it mean to be female, and part of that is heavily influenced by technology. So we're really excited to talk to you a little more about all that. So what we're going to do real quick is we're going to have each of us share sort of how we came to Mormon transhumanism, because it's actually pretty interesting. So I first joined the group, as it were, in 2013. And when I remember my first sort of hangout that I went to, it was a group of like probably like 10 to 15 white middle-aged men. No offense. I love you guys. You're all here. And I was like one of the only women who was there, right? And that was not necessarily uncomfortable for me or like weird, but like I was so excited because we actually had an MTA girls' night this week, and like that was like never had happened before, right? And I think when you look at sort of like we said in the intro, STEM, religion, there's a lot of forces that compete to keep us out, right? And I think in some ways we have to make our own space here for ourselves, and it's fun. So we want to share a little bit about how we each came to find this.
I married into it. So I started dating somebody who was in the MTA, and they brought me along, and it worked out for us, obviously. So yeah, I probably am the most recent on this panel person to join the MTA. And so I kind of got to be with other women as I came up in the MTA, which is great.
So I've been in the MTA about 2.5 years, and I found it through some podcasts and interviews that I'd heard, and started following on Facebook, and then I went to a meetup and just went to them continually. It really rang familiar to me. And I kind of joke that I was born a transhumanist. After my parents had had my older siblings, some years later, my mom felt like she needed to have more children. And it wasn't happening the old-fashioned way. And so she went and sought assistive technology. And I was conceived. So there was assistive technology involved in my conception and my creation. I use it at work with working in nursing homes. We have people who will start losing weight. Sometimes it's seasonal. Sometimes it's based on their conditions. And we intervene. We have supplements that we can give them. And sometimes I've even resorted to eggnog as a dietitian. There was a gentleman who loved eggnog, and so we gave him eggnog, and finally he gained enough calories that his body could function better, and he could then make his own decisions and feed himself. And so, and more recently, I've gotten involved with genetics and nootropics and looking at longevity and kind of maximizing our potential more than just reacting to our health. And so transhumanism and Mormon transhumanism has kind of really integrated well into my life.
I'm Wendy, and I came into the MTA probably around 2014, and my first contact really with the MTA dated back to a friend I had at BYU. Not a friend I dated, but dated back to. Carl Youngblood was one of the founders of the MTA, and we reconnected like so many people do on Facebook, and he said, I'm part of this amazing organization, you need to come. And so I started attending the meetups. We have a monthly meetup, by the way, in Provo on Sunday nights. And just the quality of the intellectual discussions was really exciting. And that really drew me to the group. And, you know, of course, we shared this common, you know, Mormon worldview. But it went far beyond that too, and there was such a tolerance too for different ideas. But there was an intellectual quality too, where I mean, you're going to be called on, you know, what statements you make and what worldview you present, and you're going to kind of be pushed on those ideas. So I was very drawn to just that the quality of the intellectual rigor and the openness in the group for discussion. It definitely felt like a place to grow. And what keeps me, though, as I thought about, like, what keeps me in the MTA, why am I on the board of directors, and this is my third year on the board of directors, is kind of like what Michael Land was saying, that Mormonism has a lot to offer transhumanism, but it goes the other way, too. Transhumanism has a lot to offer Mormonism. And particularly as a female and a feminist, I think that transhumanism has a lot to offer women, and I think that's something we'll talk more about in these discussions. And the reverse too is that women have a lot to offer transhumanism. So we are definitely here today as a panel of women, inviting women to join the MTA because we feel like there's so much room and growth there.
During the question answer period, we'd like you to invite you up to the microphone to so that the tape can capture your question, and we won't have to restate it for the group. I have a few questions that we might want to start with, and then we'll invite you to come up, because I'm sure a number of you have questions as well. The first one, it would be, what will womanhood look like in the future? And sort of, I think, connected to that, if I can have you do two questions at once, is... how will technology change definitions of gender and gender dynamics? I think those two are somewhat related. So,
okay. This is going to be the hard part, is how to, if any panel, right? So one thing I think is really interesting that I think about a lot is, so I have identified as a woman my whole life, right? But, I would say lately, because of different medical conditions that I have, I've become aware of the ways in which gender is more complicated, right, than just like what happens to be inside your pants, right? It also involves like the hormones that you have and the chromosomes that you have and the way that you're socialized and all of this. And I think I would probably identify something closer towards gender queer at this point. What I think is actually interesting about this is that that's not a conversation that was even open to me, even as recently as 5 years ago, 4 years ago, right? And part of that is because I have certain social influences that I have, but I see it even among the youth that like I interact with in my day job as a mental health professional, is that this is way more of a thing that we feel this freedom to sort of redefine, right, what it means. And I think the rate at which it's happening, I think it's not coincidental that we're also seeing things like smartphones accelerating, right? Access to information, access to data, access to other people's stories. Like, I think these things correlate, not coincidentally. And so I think the main thing that we're going to see, my personal opinion, is just a lot more freedom about our choices, right? About our choices about even appearance, right? Like, I feel a lot more freedom to embrace some of the visual aspects of myself that may not be apparent right now, because I'm definitely passing right now, right? But if I chose to not pass, I would feel a lot more freedom to do so. And I think that's that kind of radical flourishing, I think, is unprecedented in human history to be creative with your self-identity.
That kind of goes along. I was thinking, what will womanhood look in the future? Well, my thoughts turn to the past of what do I have as a woman in the present, and what does my womanhood look like differently than my grandmother or great-grandmother, and how can that pattern kind of continue? So the fact, like, Title IX sports has revolutionized women's involvement in athletics, and we're seeing more and more women and girls involved in whatever sport they want to be. There's no more like, oh, well, tennis is for girls and football is for boys, and don't cross the line. And so there's a lot more like interaction with each other on an athletic basis. And we see this kind of as trans athletes push that boundary even more. And I think that's a big question that will obviously be answered in the future. I don't know how it will be. I certainly have how I hope it will be. Because I'm all for humans competing at the top of their level. Regardless of
on, like, some of the most recent controversies, I'm not sure everybody
sure.
knows.
So if you're not aware of like trans athletes issues, there's a lot of people at any stage in a transition from one gender to another or one sex to another wanting to participate athletically at a certain level. And so you'll see it like even in high schools that a student athlete might have been taking hormones to affect their gender presentation, and then they want to join the team that they identify with. So if they identify as a female athlete, they want to join the female soccer team. And a lot of people find that troubling because there's still a lot of ideas about men are naturally bigger, stronger, faster than women, and how does this go into advantageous sports situations? But it's also touched on, like, it's been an issue kind of under the covers for a long time for intersex athletes who present one way and have different hormone balances than the majority of other athletes, and how, like, the International Olympic Committee governs who can compete in what events and as what gender. So that's been kind of a hot issue in sports for quite a while, and it's coming to a head as more transgender athletes are asking to compete. And for me personally, I want people to compete at whatever level they excel at, right? If you're fast, then run in the fastest races. If you are strong, then lift the most weights, like, regardless of gender. So personally, I want to see gender suppressed in sports rather than the strong segregation that we have right now. But I think that's a big thing that in the future will have to be sorted out as far as defining femaleness and athleticism, because we do have a lot more choices that, like, the athletic events that my grandmother participated in was like cheer and drill team. And for me, that wasn't my interest. And I had the opportunity to choose soccer, basketball, lacrosse. And so I think that development, that path of development, is one path that into the future we'll see a lot more co-ed sports, a lot more inclusion and competition together as humans, rather than being, you know, the best female player in the world and the best male player. we'll just start seeing the best humans, the most strong. So that's one vision I have, I guess.
So I'm going to talk more about changing of the gender roles, but first I did want to dovetail off of what Sylvia was saying. Technology is such an equalizer, just like what Sylvia is talking about with sports, where you can change the physical dynamics. There's a lot of implications there with that. And then also, when you look at like the way we even practice warfare, reason why technology becomes such a equalizer is because it's no longer about who's the strongest necessarily, who wields the technology, who's creating it, who's utilizing it, who's making the most of it. Transhumanism its use of technology really has a lot of implications for changing gender roles, changing the balance of power, looking at how much technology has changed gender roles in terms of reproductive technology, how much technology has freed women from domestic responsibilities so that they can be a stay-at-home mom, but still be part of the workforce. And it's not just for women either. It's also a family dynamic where you have dads who can still be working, but be stay-at-home working dads. So really transhumanism and technology is really disrupting traditional roles in so many ways.
Okay, what criticisms for women's choices might be made?
Oh, man.
So I just thinking about a particular instance where this happened. So we hosted a conference a couple years ago, and we had some women come to this conference. I don't even know how they found out about us, honestly. And they're they call themselves, I think, like traditional feminists. I won't name the actual group for their privacy. But they were really pretty riled up by the thought, because when they hear transhumanism, they think about, for example, like artificial wombs, right? Like where we're having babies, you know, not inside our bodies. And like, we were joking over lunch, right? That like, you know, people are going to say that like, oh, like you're not, I think it was Wendy who said that like women already get criticized for using the technology of formula instead of like their, you know, God-given breast milk, right? I think about how much more that criticism is amplified, like when it's like, oh, well, you can't feel the baby kick, like in your artificial womb, like you are not a real woman, right? And I think when we look at like these choices that we have to make, I mean, women who use formula, like every woman I know who does it very thoughtfully, right? And they do it because of constraints and because often it keeps their baby alive. And if your choice is between a dead baby and an organic baby, I mean, or like a non-organic baby, I'll take the non-organic baby every time, right? I think it's interesting how it opens, like women's struggles to survive, right? By using the options available to them, also opens up more avenues for criticism. But I feel like I'm taking all Wendy's talking points.
Do you want it, Wendy? I'll take it. Okay. So it goes back to like the choices, right? That like, as we go into the future, women have more choices, to be able to choose family, career, what kind of balance you want to strike between those kinds of things. And I think like right now there is a lot of criticism from society and from like women to women of like, oh, she's not a good mom because this, or, oh, she's not dedicated to her career because that, that we don't necessarily see as strongly directed towards men. And I don't know how we're going to make that stop. Because as there are more choices, right, the future technology is going to open up more choices. And right now, I think a lot of the ways that we frame women's choices is an either or. In Mormonism, either as a sister, you're going on a mission or you're married. There's no in-between. As a woman, either you're raising children or you have a career. Then we stop and I feel like we kind of pigeonhole into two directions rather than seeing a whole continuum. And so I see the future opening up more of that continuum of, oh yeah, I'm raising a big family and doing a career, and
robot nanny's helping me with
sure, yeah, or and I'm traveling the world and I'm exploring all these interests, and it just adds to your ands, the things that you have, all these choices to do. As far as the criticisms that we'll keep seeing, I think people just keep questioning women's choices. A big part of women's choices, like you were saying, with women who choose to use formula do so thoughtfully. And there's a concern that, like, women don't do things out of information. There's the stereotype that women do things emotionally. But there's been a lot of, in the history, women not having access to information. And so making choices based on wives, old wives' tales or traditional knowledge that their mothers gave them, which has been reliable in a lot of circumstances, but right. But there are situations where a woman makes a choice because she didn't have full information and it might not have been ideal. And I think we're going to see less of that case where information is becoming so freely available that women will make more informed choices. And so one of the changes that we need to see in the future is trusting women's choices. They are informed and they are measured, and like everybody's going to run their family, their career, their life differently. And we to trust that rather than say, oh, she's not good enough because of her decisions. So.
My experience is that in Mormonism, womanhood has been reduced to motherhood in almost every aspect. I mean, it's very hard to see beyond that particular role. And so you might want, can you address that in the question? You know, how will the church have to change in terms of that particular problem?
Right, and I think the phrase womanhood reduced to motherhood, we use the word reduced not because motherhood is base or low. We use the word reduced because womanhood is enormous and expansive, and womanhood is one important chunk of that. But if you are ignoring the whole expansion of womanhood, then you are reducing it to just one, And we do the same thing to men. We reduce them to career. We reduce them to one aspect of the expansion of what it is to be a person. So.
Yeah, to your point, Lori.
Because they could do fatherhood.
Yes. In Mormonism, men could wear many hats, right? And women pretty much had one, and that was your role, and you did it well or you didn't. Whereas men, it feels like, were more complete individuals. You know, they had careers, they were fathers, they were patriarchs, they were authority figures. So, yes, this is... This has definitely been a problem. And so I'm an advocate. I think the women on this panel today, advocates of women being multi-whole individuals the way society has allowed men to be. And enhancing some of those roles, too, for men where maybe they've been, limited in their household participation and in their parenting participation and making, certain choices about their children that were left for women to make. But I wanted to go back to where we were. Sylvia, you were talking about women having limited access to information. And I would say, too, women have had limited access, disproportionate access to technology. And what is ironic about that is that, think of models like Kiva and microlending. What they find in those models is that when women are given
capital, when they're given access, they grow their businesses and they don't just profit individually from those. They share that with their children. They share it with the community. So I think that, and women too have traditionally, you know, they have suffered disproportionate amounts and they're caring for those who are suffering. So to put technology in the hands of women, I think is to have, is very powerful, that it's going to have much more, it's going to have a, so much greater effect, like we've seen with microlending, that that technology is going to be shared with the village and with children and kind of brought down to the masses. And where women are traditionally keepers of the hearth and running the household. I think one of our mandates in transhumanism really is not to just be proactive about creating technologies to help humans thrive, but also to, you know, be reactive at the pace that exponential technology is coming at us and changing our world and our culture. How do we respond to that? How do we help guide that growth? How do we, you know, help it really enhance our lives and not keep us from living?
And I wanted to kind of speak to the criticisms that people criticize each other and their decisions. Right now as a dietitian, I see lots of different diets that people choose to be on, and some feel like they thrive on one diet versus another. And when we look at the genetics, their bodies respond to the nutrients differently. And some people, their cholesterol is more sensitive to their saturated fat intake than other people. Some people are more sensitive to the sodium in their diet than more than other people. For some people, it, they do benefit from low sodium diets. Other people don't. And so I think, as at least within healthcare, as we strive to get for individualized medicine, where we look at the person's individual body, what their goals are, what is their DNA makeup, how does their body respond, that hopefully we'll be able to trust each other, that they're, we're making the decisions informed and what's best for the individual, and that we'll be able to, I hope that we can accept each other's individuality and their decisions, but I think that we will become a lot more informed and a lot more personalized with our health decisions.
I think this actually gets to a great point too we wanted to touch on as well, which is sort of a very immediate technology is social media, right? And I think when you look at sort of like how women are criticized for body issues, like via technology, right? Or like women sort of, I follow a lot of like body positivity movement type things, and women who are large and willing to take up space, right? And to make their own choices, right? To say, like, I'm informed and you're not informed about me, right? And I can make this decision for myself with my freedom and my ability to access the technology and the healthcare that's adequate for me, right? People, even women claiming their power as boldly as that, still get the rounds and rounds and rounds of criticism, right? And I think even if all these women were able to do the DNA tests and have, you know, their whole panel exposed to the whole world, of like, look how perfectly aligned I am with what my body's needs are, the criticism would still be there, because for some reason, I think women's freedom is just, no one likes it. No one wants women to have, like, these, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is that freaks people out about this. Like, just a woman making a choice about anything, right? Like, it's remarkable. And so I think as technology gives more choices, that anxiety and that need to criticize only is exacerbated.
Anybody? So transhumanism is about using science and technology to improve the human condition, expanding that to Mormon transhumanism. We kind of have a framework, an idea of we can become like God, or we can become gods using some technology and science. Kind of along that way, so there's the idea of the female god, but it's not really specified. There's not a lot of detail there. So in some ways, it kind of gives you a lot of opportunity for you get to define what that looks like. As technology progresses in the future, where do you see womanhood progressing as you go down that path to godhood? What does that? What do you think that would look like for you or for others?
I like that question. I do want to challenge, like, as much as we know, or as vacuous as our knowledge about a mother god is, I'm going to challenge anything that we know about a father god. Is he actually white and big and in the sky with blue eyes? Like, so I think that the question applies equally, because there are assumptions that we have about a male god, but I don't think that they're necessarily concrete. Whereas the assumptions that we have about a female god are just far less, I guess, taken for granted, or far less ingrained in the culture, in the religious society. So I think for a lot of people, connecting with a female deity means connecting with femininity. And there are our traditional, like, the mothering instinct, the caretaking, nurturing kind of feelings that we have towards females in our lives, and perhaps as females, that is a very natural place to direct kind of a female deity. But I think, as we've been talking about, like, expanding femininity and expanding choices and expanding options, opportunities, a female god would obviously be unlimited. Who's to say that she cannot do what she wants? Who's to say that she has to be in the kitchen? And so I think a female god is really instrumental in expanding the definitions of femininity and expanding what it means to be a woman, that you are empowered. A female god may nurture just as well as she may destroy, right? She's a creator and a destroyer, just like a male god may be. So that's my vision, at least.
I'll just say that for me, I don't think of gender so much when I think of God. I think more of a magnificence. I think more of qualities, creative quality, innovative quality, compassionate, and benevolence, like beyond our imagination, the wonder of kindness and creation in that way. So
I think it's really important too, like, something that our good friend Blair Osler has taught me is to think about it more in terms of heavenly parents. I think there's a certain, hopefully I don't make anybody angry by saying this, I see a sort of like when we talk about Heavenly Mother, the sort of like feminine essentialism, right? Like, even though, like, my heart, like, wants to really love that and just, like, sort of, like, harken back to, like, this, like, you know, really just, you know, a woman who's just like me, going back to my comment earlier about how I think gender is so much more complex and expansive, right? I think it's much more likely that we have heavenly parents who express all different kinds of aspects of gender, and some on the more femme side, some on the more masculine side, right? And that's sort of the direction that I see myself going. Again, from this theme of freedom, is like, there might be multiple heavenly mothers to which I could pattern after myself based on who I am choosing through technology, personal autonomy to be.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to add a follow-up with that. You mentioned compassion, and I think that's something that's kind of under-emphasized in transhumanism, and probably to an extent Mormon transhumanism, as a technology. Social technology and compassionate technology is going to be just as important if we're going to not end up destroying ourselves, right, with this awesome power.
I was going to say that I think part of the appeal to inquire after a female god comes from this desire for something more individual. A lot of us received the male god as a tradition that was given to us, and the female god is out there to discover for ourselves. And I think that that freshness appeals to a lot of people. And I think that the pursuit of a female god also appeals to a lot of women, because sometimes, like, men are just to headache, and you have a problem, and it's, you know, it feels more natural to pray to a female god or to appeal to a woman who might have been through that, because it's harder to imagine a male god ever having ever been oppressed. But, you know, sometimes you're like, I'm feeling extra oppressed today, so I'm going to go search after mother. And I think that's an important dynamic. Regarding the female take on godhood, I personally struggle between, like, the gender essentialism of, like, female compassion. Compassion is for women, and not compassion is for men, because I'm like, no. Because I know a lot of very compassionate, very kind, gentle men. And, you know, on the field, I'm going to destroy you, so whatever. But there are perspectives that we've been socially trained that women are trained to be more accommodating, trained to be more interested in pursuing other people's comfort, whereas men may not be. And I think that those perspectives that we've socialized within ourselves, if those perspectives are not given in godhood, then the god is not complete. The godhood is imperfect if we do not have a full perspective that includes compassion, that includes nurturing and discipline and these kind of traditional traits in one binary or another coming into a wholeness in themselves. So,
I can see that this is a really intelligent, far-reaching, discussion-oriented group. Probably too smart for me. But I do have a question, and that is, are there any societal goals or specific initiatives that you support, that you would like to see moved forward in society that are, you know, not so free-ranging discussion-based, but actual initiatives that you feel would improve things?
I mean, I don't know. It's just probably something I should take, because this is a question we get asked quite a bit, right? Madam CEO. Blair's here, by the way. She missed our shout-out to her. So if you want to hear some really interesting stuff on gender and Heavenly Mother, you should talk to that lady in the pink. I think that this is an ongoing debate, I think, of our organization. But I think one of our strongest goals right now is to have Latter-day Saints, have Mormons, be more accepting and understanding, like, of these ideas, right? And there could be a lot of goals I could delineate, but this one is particularly important for me. I think about, I was really involved with a Latter-day Saint environmentalist movement for a lot of years. And we would get a lot of people, you know, who would come in and they would say things like, why do we need to worry about the landfills? Like, Jesus is just going to fix it when he comes back at the second coming, right? And the deeper I went into transhumanism, the more I was like, no, that is not how it's going to work. Like, at the second coming, like, we're going to all be working together as a community of gods to restore the earth and bring about paradisiacal glory, right? But that has implications. Like if you believe things in a transhumanist way, it changes how you act right now, right? And I don't actually know that I can delineate really clearly what our transhumanist goals are. Like, we're too small to make, we have some people in our group who are really into cryonics, right? Where you, like, freeze your body to be resurrected at some day in the future. And they've actually done this to themselves. Like, they've signed it for themselves or done it to loved ones. They're still alive. But that's more at the personal level. I think at an organizational level, I do see that like a switch in your brain happens when you have this lens.
I think this isn't like necessarily a thing that we campaign on or something, but I think across the board, most of us agree that, like, a future that is straight white male middle class is not desirable. Like, if it's exclusively that, we aren't interested. And a lot of us see us as being integral parts in making the future. And so I think a lot of us, through whatever lens we go through, education or Kiva loans or whatever, a lot of us are interested in empowering minorities to make sure that everybody has equitable access to the future, so that the future, that's the interest that we want, is a future that we want to live in and creating that. And so that's a big topic, is making sure that everyone has equal access to the future, to information, to whatever wealth, instead of creating a future that excludes other countries, poorer countries, or certain colors of people. So.
So, Vicky, your question shows that we need you in the MTA. You're definitely, you know, that's an excellent question, and you would be a good brain in the MTA. I'm going to talk a little bit about our declaration, which is to put ourselves in the immersive role of Jesus Christ as compassionate creators. And this works in with Sylvia's points, too, that what the vision that we're trying to achieve and the things that we're trying to achieve ultimately, it is not an elitist vision. It is a form, really, of it's egalitarian. It's a form of universal salvation. The idea is to raise all. To your question specifically about our initiatives, this is me speaking as one in the MTA. I think that's phase two. We're still in phase one. We are very much a discussion group, a thought group, an advocacy group. This is a future phase that we haven't reached yet. And this is why we need people asking these questions and helping us actually, you know, design and move forward with what our specific initiatives are going to be. But we are looking at bigger picture right now and trying to make that into very specific goals and initiatives. We're moving in that direction.
Yeah, and I think even though we may not have many formal initiatives as the organization, we each take what we've discussed and what we've shared into our own spheres, and we take it into our jobs, we take it into our families, we take it into our wards, and we're sharing it. We're trying to influence more good, to create a more Zion.
What? This is not going to be a hardball. So it really seems like a natural thing that is easy to acknowledge, that we've got patriarchal religion on the one hand, we've got science and technology on the other end, these very male-dominated, female-exclusive fields for a number of reasons, largely cultural. And there are a lot of things that you have an uphill battle in fighting being women in this space, and maybe it's a double whammy.
Do you personally, Chad?
Yes, I'm the man keeping you down too. But what I was wondering is, even though I've had long discussions with Wendy and others about this, and we can talk about that all day, I haven't given as much thought to what are the advantages or benefits of being a woman in these fields. It was mentioned that, you know, that women have specific advantages. You know, we've seen proof that you give a woman money and she's going to share it with her family and her community, and she's going to look for the betterment of the larger group and not go spend it on alcohol or whatever else. Are there things that you've thought about that you're in a unique position to do as women in this field of Mormon transhumanism?
So one of those, this is what I say as a woman in STEM, of course, but is stopping the STEM centrism that I feel like we see the MTA and the technological future as this STEM project. And you got to know your physics and your computer science to get it. Obviously we're going to need that, but it's not a robust future. It's not, like, if we forget the organizational things, the educational things, how are we going to raise up future children in an educational program? How's future food going to look? How is all of these things that technology will have a hand in, but if we overemphasize the influence of STEM to the exclusion of other disciplines, which generally women are more involved in, since they are less involved in STEM, then we are creating a stunted future. So including, you know, just a more full reach of people in general, but also appealing to women who won't have necessarily a STEM-centric perspective, can help us create that robust future that incorporates all the things instead of planning your STEM project out and then, oh, we forgot to plan for, like, all this other stuff and we accidentally created the robot apocalypse, right? So...
It's interesting, actually, this is a little bit of an inverse of your question, but our second CEO is female and our third CEO is female. And I've watched a shift happen in the organization that I feel like it feels a little, in some ways, it's striving towards something that's maybe a little more approachable for other people. And maybe that's just the particular personalities of the leaders, or maybe it's something to do with our inherent femaleness. I don't know. I don't know. I think one thing that's actually pretty cool about the MTA is that I've always found that there was a lot of space made for me. I haven't really ever had too much of a problem just like taking up space, like get out of my way, right? Like I'm here. But these men in the MTA, like I said, when I first came in, I mean, like I'm the only woman in the room, right? And I'm young and I don't know half of what they're talking about. I only learned what exponential change meant like 2 years ago, right? Like, I didn't know what was going on. But despite that, like a lot of just like room was made for me just to say things and explore things. And I think that's really empowering. Like, and it wasn't like these men did it like, oh, because that's what men are supposed to do. They're supposed to be feminists, right? Like it was just like natural, like breathing to them. And I think it sets a model for, when you're maybe a little bit less hyped up on literalism, it makes you a little bit more open to being less literal about things like gender roles. That would be my guess.
You set up the question perfectly, and I threw out some ideas surrounding that earlier, but... I'll try to bring out those ideas again in an organized way. But for the work that women are already doing, I think, so again, this kind of statement I made before that I think transhumanism has a lot to offer women, but I think women have a lot to offer transhumanism. I feel like the work that women are already doing, we need to even just recognize what technology women are already using and how... what further technology they can use. And when we talk about technology, we don't necessarily mean our cell phones and our laptops. We mean on a basically any tool or gadget or device that helps you be more productive in what you're trying to do, helps you to meet your goals, helps you to produce. I think one of the things we've tried to do is get women and individuals just to realize that they're already transhumanist. And then once you see things through a transhumanist lens, then you can start to harness the power of where you want that to take you and how technology can make you that much more productive. But specifically with women, we talked a little bit about the points Chad brought up about like micro-lending and how they see that women will use capital and they'll use resources different than men. This is why we need women's minds and women's brains in this field. If they do think differently, if they do bring something else to the table, this is a whole other area of transhumanism that needs work. And I would say that whatever work women want to do, you know, traditional roles have been, like we were talking about, keepers of the hearth, running the household, and, you know, working with those who are suffering. There's so much that transhumanism and technology has to bear in making progress in that work. And
I think even within the Mormon sphere, even as gender roles are changing, they still are very rather traditional. And so if you really want the change to happen, when I've heard most bishops speak, if they want change to happen in the ward, they go to the women. If you want the change to happen in the society and in the next generation, it's the women. I homeschooled my children for 2 years, and the homeschool groups, there weren't many men. There were some men there, but it was mostly women making the education decisions for their children. And if you don't have women being involved with these discussions, learning it, being part of it, participating in it, and then taking it home, or sharing it, even with, you know, like you said, the social networks, Facebook is huge for women. How many LDS dad Facebook groups are there compared to LDS women Facebook groups, or LDS moms, or LDS women who work, aspiring Mormon women? I don't know that there's a lot of male equivalent to these groups. And so it will need women in order to spread laterally and generationally. We have to be involved.
For good and for ill, the people that are making the advances, developments that are going to lead to this transhuman future that we're hoping for, worrying about, that we're talking about, belong to this Western tradition predominantly. China's coming in and doing some interesting things too in biotech. But the cultures that are in charge of the world and have the power to be making these advances have some pretty strong, consistent features, and that they tend to be pretty dang colonialist and very imperial and very masculine in a lot of these traditional kind of unfortunate ways. And we're pursuing in, I think, a lot in this transhuman effort to make us all gods. And when we say gods, we mean the white guy in the sky. That is just imbued how we think about things. Our goals for even like our highest principles of liberalism and equality, humanity, just all of us, like, and our highest values of liberalism and trying to create equality of opportunity, these were values developed by very, very male thinkers. Wendy Brown, who's great, talks about this. But there's a question of like whether we're going to end up accidentally creating a world where the gods everyone is capable of being is only appealing to a particular type of person. So, question. If you could make one change in this 100-year effort of transhumanism, you could, like, omnipotently make something happen, like women will be involved equally or something, what would you change to make sure that we end up at a future with a God possibility that's valuable to everyone and not just people that want to be white guys with lots of power?
I guess I just answer first all the time, but I'm just going to say black woman magic. Like, black women have all the answers. I think that's like the short, quippy version of that, but empowering minorities is, I think, even bigger than, because like as much as I can speak from my womanness, I'm still speaking from my whiteness, my Americanness, my middle classness, and that, like, those privileges can help me make good decisions. I have education to rely on. I've been able to travel and experience more of the world. So, like, compared to, like, you know, a small child coming out of, like, the streets of Mumbai who has only experienced one piece of the world and it's mostly suffering, you know, they might not make the best decisions because they're more concerned about getting food than creating a future for everybody. But I'd say, you know, that constant checking, sometimes we make decisions without checking how is this going to influence this group of people, how is this going to influence the LGBT community, how is this going to influence the rest of the world while we start pumping acid smoke into the air, right? And so I think my one change would be the board of directors for the world is, right, or, you know, the science directors, the religious directors involve black women, Indian children, African, you know, every different perspective we can possibly get to make decisions. So
I think the thing you're talking about with wealth, I think, is so important, because there's some really terrifying anecdotal stories about very, very wealthy technocrats who basically don't believe in the social cohesion, right? There's an interesting article on Medium about this guy was trying to figure out, this technocrat was like, how do I, like when the apocalypse comes, how do I keep my guards from, like, you know, fleeing on me, right? And this writer's answer was like, well, basically just be nice to them now. And the guy was like, no way, dude, like that won't ever work, right? Like that, they'll turn on me. He just totally doesn't believe in social cohesion. And that's you get in this weird place when you have power and wealth. But I work a lot with very wealthy, I mean, relatively wealthy people in Utah Valley because of my nonprofit job. And they're different, right? Some of them are still probably terrible people in their own ways, but they know at least they should be thinking about the poor, and they should be thinking about giving away what they have. And I think actually religion has an incredibly powerful effect on wealth and power. And I think that's why Mormon transhumanism in particular is really important towards creating the future that we want.